Thank you, sir. This is appreciate the opportunity to address the group and talk a little bit about our programs. I'm going to offer a couple of numbers in terms of some of the information that we work with on an ongoing basis. A lot of this information is available on our website, so if you're wanting to do a deep dive, I can definitely send you in that direction. Let's see, which way do I click? Am I clicking? Oh, that's the button. Okay. There you have it. Okay, just wanted to give you sort of a broad overview of our programs, as I mentioned. The other speakers will be hitting on very specific topics related to this general issue, but my goal here is to hit on these just to give you a better context for where we're going and where we've been. A little bit about the history, and then I'm going to touch on some of the internal definitions and such. Our office, the Sexual Assault Prevention Response Office, has been in place since 2005. And when I say that, I also like to follow with a sentence that reminds folks that the military services have had these kinds of programs in place many, many years before that. There have always been efforts to prevent and respond to sexual assault. But what our office did was establish a very broad-based policy that everyone within the department could then follow and then sort of check back with in terms of what was working and what wasn't. As you can see, we've got a very broad vision for the department, enabled military readiness by establishing a culture free of sexual assault. We're focusing on the culture because we recognize that's the key ingredient to preventing and responding to these cases. I think it's fairly well known that in the civilian sector as well as the military, we'll try as we might, we're not ever going to be able to eliminate this entirely, but what we have to do is to create an environment where it's just flat out not acceptable in terms of that for military members. So cascading down from that, our policy then has been built around the idea of prevention, response, and then accountability. And in this case, it's both system accountability, meaning is everybody doing what they said they're going to do, and then also perpetrator accountability. And then from that, our office serves as a single point of authority and responsibility. So we're the folks that go up to Capitol Hill and talk to members of Congress about what we're doing, what we've got planned. We certainly listen to them in terms of their needs. We get the calls from the media in terms of the inquiries and that kind of thing. So we're the kind of major touchstone in terms of that. Our approach is essentially focused on three different prongs and identified here. We first want to focus on victim care. That was why the program was set up in the first place. Secretary Rumsfeld saw the need back in 2003 and 4 to try and figure out how do we care for victims. So whenever I talk about our program, I always like to emphasize that there's a million and one different things we could be doing, but it all builds out from that idea of what's the impact on the victim. And once we got that in place, then we started to expand it and say, okay, let's focus on what can we do to prevent it. And then how do we then hold the system accountable? And this is where our office gets into the responsibility of generating reports for Congress, for responding to GAO inquiries and that kind of thing. Wanted to start out here by making sure that we are all aware of when we talk about sexual assault within the Department of Defense, you can see we've got a very broad listing here. There's eight different categories from the most egregious of rape all the way down to more of an attempted offense. And it's important to recognize when we talk about comparing our statistics to the civilian sector, in most cases, they don't have this wide range of eight different categories. They're talking about one incidence, maybe in most cases talking about rape. So when we put up our numbers later, just keep in mind that we're talking about this very, very broad spectrum. And then the other point I want to point out is written down here in red. We deal a lot with our friends at the VA in terms of making sure that veterans have the support that they need going through. So a lot of our efforts are trying to ensure people are aware of what we do, what we handle, and what we don't handle. And specifically, the VA refers to a lot of cases as military sexual trauma. For us, that's broken in between sexual harassment and sexual assault. And as you know, we don't deal with harassment issues, so our figures are just related to assault. So we're not. There's another office within DOD that deals with harassment issues. So again, just kind of keep that in mind. One of the important pieces that we have to pull out when we talk about training and internal training, but also in terms of external audiences, it gets back to this issue of consent. And we always like to hammer this point home, and there's it's always surprising to me when we have to talk about this, but just to sort of lay out in terms of how we present this issue to folks, we always are very clear it's not a matter of dress or any other situation that the potential victim is presenting. It's not a matter of a relationship. I mean, it's all a matter of whether or not that individual, that victim, said yes or no. And so we always come back to emphasizing this point about consent. And this is something that when we work with our young service members, we make sure that everybody is aware of what that term means. And again, as we think through, this is a piece that we've emphasized again and again. One of the issues that we know in talking to young service members who are primarily the victims of this crime from the 18 to 24-year-old age range are that there are a lot of reasons why folks don't come forward. Many of these are unique to the military environment, and some are not. But what we've done over the course of a couple years is both in terms of qualitative research, focus groups and such, we've gathered these insights, and then periodically we'll do a survey to see what are some of the strongest issues that we can go back through and address. So as you can see, there are quite a few issues here that may hold someone back from coming forward. And our issue is that there's a couple different ways that one can report, but it is not, again, kind of back to the victim care. We want to make sure that victim gets the care and support that they need. So if they come to a DOD official, great. If they choose to go to a civilian sector to report and to get the care they need, that's also fine. But we just want to make sure that they're headed in some path. So as you can see, a couple of these get on the idea of working with the victims and the potential victims to make sure that they're aware that this is a crime, that they did not, there is no responsibility on their part, that they can come forward and get the support that they need. So again, when we talk about training, these are some of the major points that we come back to again and again. One of the things that we did within the department to help folks understand or to make some of the reporting options more available to them was to develop two different reporting routes. And we call them the restricted and unrestricted route. The unrestricted is just that. If I go to my commander, say Sarah is my boss, is my commander, I would go to her and say, this happened to me. Then as the commander, she is responsible for going forward and starting an investigation, telling the commanders above and beyond that this happened to me, individual by name. That allows us, in those cases, to go forward and because of the investigation, potentially catch the perpetrator and hold him or her accountable for their actions. Knowing that, though, because of the previous slide where we heard there are many reasons why folks didn't report, in 2005 we also put in place this second option of what we call restricted reporting. And this is where an individual is able to go to certain people and say, listen, this happened to me, but I don't want everybody to know about it. I may change my mind later, which is certainly an option. They can go from one path to another. But right now, what I want to do is to get into treatment and get some care and get the support I need. So we have put this restricted option in place. You'll note that since 2005, we've had almost 4,400 folks choose that path. Maybe 10 or 15% or so each year will switch one way or the other. We'll switch to unrestricted. But what we believe is that that's 4,400 people that have gotten the care that they might not have otherwise. So again, kind of back to our victim focus. So who makes up the team of folks that support these individuals? The three individuals listed in red are the three categories: the sexual assault response coordinator, the victim advocates, and the medical care professionals are the three individuals of that list that can take the restricted report. And then we've certainly got other folks listed there that can also help out and can guide people to the resources that they need. As we go through our training, and one of the important things that I track from the communications perspective is making sure that every service member is aware of to whom they need to go to file a restricted report versus an unrestricted. And the reason that's so important is because if you for some reason choose to go to your unit commander or an investigator and talk about the crime that happened to you, you would not be in a position to file a restricted report. You can't go backwards. So again, these are messages that we emphasize again and again. We have a couple of websites that we put out there now. The one in the lower right, myduty.mil, has been up for a couple years. This was focused on resources specifically for young service members. We tried to give it a little bit of a younger vibe, I guess that's the way. We did some focus groups and tried to figure out what would be appealing to folks, what were the types of information that they wanted. We get a lot of hits on this. I think we're up to well over 100,000 people coming in, getting information for themselves or for a friend. Up on the other corner, we have the DoD Safe Helpline, and this is a new resource available just this spring. We soft launched it in April, and we've had and I've got some additional data. The point here is that this was an opportunity for folks to reach outside the department and to learn a little bit about resources that are out there. You can call, click, or text into the DoD Safe Helpline and get the support that you might want. If you call, you're connected through a phone line that you can use from anywhere in the world. You're connected to the experts at the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, who also run a civilian hotline. Those individuals answering the military calls have gotten extra training, as it were, for military culture to understand some of the acronyms and some of the dynamics of what the caller is facing. We've also got texting services, so if you want to know where your SARC or your sexual assault response coordinator is located, you can text us your zip code and we'll send you that information. And then there's an online chat, and this is an opportunity for folks to kind of go back and forth. In the 6 or 8 months we've been up, this is through the end of September, and probably another 2,000 or 3,000 since then, we've got 20 or plus thousand unique visitors. So I may go back on a daily basis, but I would only be counted as one individual, so unique in that regard. And then we've helped more than probably over 1,300 people now. And this is the idea that somebody is connected in with a helpline worker and they referred them on to either direct support resources or some other materials. So we feel pretty good that we're reaching out in that regard. We did just a 90-day analysis of the data that was out there. Again, a really quick snapshot, just 200 or so folks that we pulled. But we've got some interesting trends to talk about and things to kind of keep as we're moving along. We recognize that more men are contacting our helpline than the RAIN helpline, so that was interesting in terms of where folks are going for help. Also, about 50% of the folks that came through were calling us about incidents that had occurred many years ago, in some cases previous to even coming into the military. With our current policy in place, or actually a new policy, it's going to be in place in a couple of weeks, if I was assaulted prior to going into the military, join the military, and then talk to one of the individuals I listed, I would be able to get that support and the support and care through military services. So we're talking about folks that have had a long, been dealing with this problem for many, many years and finally are coming forward, which is great. We've got a couple of cases that are policy revisions that we've got underway. One of the things we want to ensure is that there's no doubt that these cases are treated as an emergency when they come to a care facility. That is very much the unspoken word, but we want to just make sure we got it in writing so that resources and such will match through with that. We also want to make sure that we've got some national credentialing for victims when they come to these SARCs and victim advocates at the provincial. So those national credentials are coming into place now. Little bit of information about our statistics. Every couple of years we do an anonymous survey of our service members and then also provide that information to Congress on an annual basis. And then we also go out to the academies, the military academies, and talk to folks. This is a slide that talks a little bit about the reports that we've had over time. And again, this is the information that we get from service members who come and file a restricted or unrestricted report. So we're about 3,200 or so here. The types of reports that we get, all the eight categories, but as you can see, the most egregious are the rape and the sexual assault. And we want to just, again, emphasize that we've got incidents occurring across the spectrum, but when we think about the support that we need, obviously that's the largest two areas. who is either reporting these as a victim or a perpetrator, and then in most cases it parallels that in the civilian sector. Young individuals, male and female, fairly young. These are not stranger incidents. These are individuals that know each other, and oftentimes alcohol is involved. This is the big piece that we're working on now. We want to make sure that individuals that have been assaulted can come forward in some fashion that's comfortable for them. So I mentioned that we've had about 3,100 reports. We've had more people come forward, as you can see from that bottom line, the 2,600. But from some of the anonymous surveys, we know that there may have been as much as 20,000 or so folks that have experienced some kind of unwanted contact. Again, it may be something not as extreme as on that list of eight factors, but nonetheless, it's unacceptable. So our goal is to really close that gap as much as possible. A couple of things about our prevention program. Our focus is first and foremost on the human toll. I mean, there's flat out no question about that. But where we also then try and connect folks to is the issue of the core values, the connection to military readiness, financial costs. I mean, all these factors play into making sure that we can keep this issue as top of mind as possible. And then really the issue that I want to emphasize and close with here is that we have a new two-star general who came out of a command situation, and her background is very much of this crime is unacceptable, and we need to make sure that all commanders really understand the importance of supporting victims and creating that environment. So a lot of what we talk about in my communications effort is that sexual assault's a crime, will not be ignored, excused, or condoned. Very much a straightforward piece there. And then when we talk about our prevention efforts broadly, these are the various areas that we reach across. Educating providers is certainly one of the reasons that we're here today. The training that we do for service members, the Hill outreach, all those pieces are reflected as we think about trying to make sure we've got a program that's robust but also responsive to victims' needs. And then it's a couple things we're headed out to. We want to make sure that we've got a continuum of care in place so that if we've got victims transitioning from the military out into the civilian sector through the VA or through other resources, that we've got places and programs in place that can support them. So that's one of our big issues right now, is to figure out who and what needs to be involved in this continuum of care, which is why this presentation, I think, dovetails so well with the conference theme. And that is it. So, thank you.